All right, here we go again. We're back with another weekly Sheep Farm podcast. This is episode 210. The format is simple. We try and release, well, we do release a minimum of four shows a month. Members get the full podcast, generally 2 hours plus, plus their ability to download. Non-members get part one, 1 hour plus. All new shows are released on Saturdays, but if you subscribe, you'll get an email telling you that there's a new release out, etc., etc. We also release part one on Podomatic that send them out or distribute them out to Spotify, Amazon, Audible, and Apple, and a few others. So please subscribe to the website for any email notifications for all new shows and all else we've got coming up. You can join my large nostril younger brother on Tinstagram as well if you want to. You can direct message him or direct nostril him on there. I'd like to thank everybody for ordering supplements. Remember to use the code. I know some people still order and don't use the code. It's like an ongoing theme, so we have to do it in retrospective. Also, we did a podcast with Mark Devlin, Nathan Lucius, and the Rise Above guys, Lance and Andy PG, on, I think it was recorded on Wednesday. I think as we're talking now, which is Friday the 10th, Mark put it live today on his YouTube channel, so I'll put a link in the podcast for that podcast as well if you want to go over there and have a listen to that. I think that were about 2 hours long, listening to us lunatics rant on about 2024, the good old 2024. Can you believe, Chris, it's 5 years since obviously since 2020.
I can't believe I've had to look at you for 4 hours this week. We've done 4 hours worth of recording.
It's longer than four hours. Hours with Mark. Yeah. We've done 2 hours with this guest who's going to be on afterwards. And now I've got to look at your lovely face.
and also your
Black Nicholson haircut.
And also, I've had a bit of a sore week, so I'm a bit under the weather in Buffham. I hardly remember any of them. I've been so screwed this week.
You've just gone through the motions, haven't you? You've been professional. The show's got to go on, Chris.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, even though I felt like shite.
And all that bollocks. And what a week we've had, our last few weeks. Trudeau stepping down, escape from LA, the fires, same MO as everything else. Manchester Airport closed for four times because there were a millimetre of snow. Grooming gangs. Earth. 2024 was the warmest on record. I thought 2023 was the warmest on record. I don't know which record. It's same old record. It just keeps going round and playing the same old record.
I heard that again. I heard Trudeau talking about when he steps down. And do you know what? There's no one, even England, America, or anyone, that sounds more like an actor acting than he does. He just sounds like an actor acting.
Yeah.
That's all he sounds like to me. I don't hear any authority or anything other than an actor. Twatter.
Well, all these people are empty shells, aren't they?
He's a prick, that guy.
Just monumental. Monumental. Can you believe? I think he's been in for 8 years, Chris.
Yeah.
No. He's been ahead. He does make my skin crawl as well. He's been head of the destruction of Canada. Beautiful place, never been. Looks absolutely awesome, just Canada. A good friend in Christian Freeland, whose dad or granddad or whatever were a Nazi. SS officer.
Well, it was that dickhead, wasn't it, that got that Nazi to speak?
probably Christiana Freeland's dad.
Wasn't it him that did it when he got that Nazi Ukraine?
So in the house
against the Russians.
Yeah, in Canadian Parliament.
Yeah,
so yeah, that Ukrainian SS Nazi.
Fought against the Russians because they were going everywhere anti-Russian at the time, weren't it? Fought against the Russians. Yeah. But didn't that mean he was... Not that it means anything, really, even if you were a Nazi, because he was just doing what he was told, like anyone else, wasn't he? I don't think it means anything, if I'm honest. They were in the German.
But that war against the Russians, do you mean that war that America, Britain, and Canada were on Russia's side? That war.
That's what I mean. Again, though, that must have been. Do you think that was just a joke on us? Do you think it was just a piss take? Because can they be that stupid?
Everything a bit pissed out? Like, email I sent you the other day, you, Mark, and Matt Sergio, about that guy who saved wild birds. He had an aviary with wild birds, and he got caught bird flu off him. Even though he didn't have any symptoms, remind you of anything? He caught bird flu, not now he got tested. So they killed all his birds and he were called Anthony Gosling.
So when you think about these stories in reverse, how did they find out he had bird flu? How did they know? You know, none
Chris,
of it.
Let's just make sense. Because right. if you've got no symptoms, you go. No,
what
doctor,
I mean is fine.
You no, go to doctor. I've mean got no symptoms.
Shut the fuck up a minute. What I mean is, they play out like film scripts, don't they? They don't play out like reality. You know, we found this one guy with birds, and he's got bird flu. It's not real. It can't be real, can it?
No.
Like that. I always remember in COVID that one woman who went into a church and she didn't get tapped or whatever, and she gave COVID to the entire people. I think it was in Korea. Gave it to everyone in the church, and they all died. No, I think you're right. I think there is a bit of a delay factor. Yeah.
I think you've got to look at it realistically, Chris. If you go to your doctor's and you've got no symptoms, he's bound to test you for bird flu. He won't send you home and say there's nothing wrong with you, right? He'll test you for bird flu.
Just bird with everything.
Any kind of flu you want. Yeah, any kind of flu you want. Which flu do you want to be tested for this time?
Mr. Gosling.
While he's throwing pieces of bread.
Shit on his chair.
How did you know he had bird flu? Well, he shit on my chair and he were in fucking Pondent Park.
And he couldn't talk and he just kept going. But if there's a man with bird flu, it's him. He looks like a fucking bird.
Definitely is. You know what? And that's how crazy it is, isn't it? That is, honestly, right? Yeah. How crazy it is.
It is. So that, I think we talked about that whole, what to call it? No, we were talking about it today, actually. Jacob. That whole grooming thing. I mean, that's been around since 2012. I'm not saying it's not horrible, and I'm sure it is horrible. But they're using it as another distraction, aren't they? Like anything else.
Well, to get everyone riled up. Yeah, the grooming gangs is a real thing. Whether it's a grooming gang or whether it's just a load of lunatics going around molesting young girls, they should be locked up and key thrown away. There's no doubt about that. But you're talking of probably 5% of all crimes of that nature are done by Pakistani grooming gangs. Right, yeah. So let's be fair. The amount of airplay that's got in the mainstream, if you put it to in the subject, it's nothing in the subject. The whole subject needs to be discussed, not one part of that subject. The problem is, anybody who's into the Tommy Yaxley Lennon scenario. Tommy Robinson, all the followers of him are jumping on the bandwagon because they're all immigrants, they're all this, And I'm sure some of them are immigrants, and I've got no issue with immigrants. Do I think that all these people should be coming over here unchecked? No, do a bollocks, no. So
It's more the hate bait.
It's the fringe magnet type stuff, and I see people jumping on the bandwagon, and if it's on that mainstream news, it's on there for an agenda.
If it's making you angry, it's done its job.
It's done its job, But like you've done your job sometimes when you make me angry.
Yeah, I like to think so. Yeah. I wish I could do it more often.
We get some good comments on, actually, that try and get me angry, but it doesn't work. Do you know why it doesn't work? Because I don't give a shit.
That's not true, Dominic.
No, it's not true at all. But anyway, so the grooming gang thing. I mean, I'm writing my book, and the irony about that is that two of the dames that were running the IIPA, I think it is, anyway, the inquiry into abuse in boarding schools from the 60s through to now, two of them people. One of them were a neighbour of Leon Britton's and Leon Britton's friend.
Yeah.
And the other one was the brother of Cecil Havers, who's Nigel Havers' dad, who was also linked to a paedophile ring, who was a judge. He was the guy that judged the Ripper cases and all this type of stuff, and the Birmingham Six, I think it were, or the Guildford Four, one of the two. And so these same people have people in their family or close proximity, and they're running an inquiry into abuse. And that's why these things are never solved.
Well, I was just going to say that all the attention and all the attention's aimed at us, you know, working class scumbags, basically. Isn't it? It is aimed at people, you know. Forget all the white collar crime. You know, I'm not just talking about these gangs and stuff. It's always aimed at just what the goyim are up to, not what the elitists are up to, or the bankers, or whoever. It's all aimed at us. Just we're doing it. I mean, even climate change, we're doing it. You know, hate each other.
Yeah, just getting us to hate each other. Yeah. That them 2 million people in 2020 or 2021 that were in London, they don't want that. They need to split them people up. They need to split them people up.
Well, that's exactly why we are where we are now, I think, because they realised, fucking hell, the mob's getting together. They're actually getting together.
And they're actually on side with each other.
Which is the worst fear. That is the worst fear.
Everybody were on side with each other. Every walk of life. Muslim, Jewish, Christian. It were irrelevant. It were a beautiful thing, right? Yeah. And 100,000 people or whatever they were outside BBC, and it weren't even on the BBC.
Yeah.
That's
the
win.
Worst nightmare. That is the worst nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah, that is full on 1984, V for Vendetta. That is full on that. You've got 100,000 people outside the main corporation, the media corporation, and it isn't even in a newspaper or on the television.
That literally was that match at the end of the film, wasn't it?
Yes.
Doesn't happen in the comic book, I'll just say. But
But it was that match, because people were watching it in pubs, weren't they? And they would. But going back to the grooming gang, what it does is, it feeds people. I noticed Prince Charles's speech. I forget who played it now. I heard it being played, and he was talking about how the riots had brought people together.
Yeah,
and how the community had helped rebuild everything and things like that. And what is the same judges that were locking people up for 4 years for maybe throwing a brick or doing a tweet or something like that? They were letting paedophiles off. These aren't Pakistani grooming gangs. These are white paedophiles.
Mm.
Yeah? They were the same judge were letting them off with community service, were locking people up for 3 and 4 years for being part of that riot.
Mm. When we all know what the real paedo problem is, and it ain't us lot, I would say.
It's a controlled thing. It's controlled to keep people in line, isn't it? The whole, whatever you want to call it, what you've just called it, the paedophilia network, is to keep people in line. It's the fear factor.
I'm pointing out something really obvious here, but look at Charlie himself, surrounded by paedos. I don't think. I don't know any. Yeah. He knows loads.
Lord Mountbatten.
I'm not. I don't think.
Well, I mean, never was. I mean, You've got him and his brother surrounded by apparent Epstein. If you believe everything that was written about Epstein, I'm not saying it's wrong, but I'm sure there's more, is what I'm trying to say. We see the small part of it, and that was an obvious operation. You've got Mountbatten.
Sting operation.
You've got massive Jimmy Savile.
Sting operation.
So, I wouldn't. I know that even my wife's dad came and he was saying, yeah, what are you going to get? This was a few weeks ago. All these immigrants coming over, they're going to be after young white women, right?
Yeah.
I said, have you bought into all that nonsense?
Yeah.
But then 2 weeks later, where's this all come from? Why now? Why has this grooming gang thing just come out of the ether?
Like I said, case is from 2012, isn't it? I think it's
before. A UK column.
They've been going on about it for years, haven't they?
Years. In the 2000s, Chris, they were when they first started doing what they were doing. Yeah. They were on about this.
And now it's been ignored, and now they've decided to bring it up now.
Yeah, look at John Wedger. John Wedger were on about this stuff. Years, and he got booted out of police, more or less. Yeah, kids taken off him for talking about this stuff. Yeah, crazy. It's crazy. But this goes right in. I was having a conversation with my union in car today when we're talking to you. And if you think about it now, me and you, Mark Devlin, right, are all classed as far right. Andrew Tate, and regardless of what you believe about him, is a Muslim, and he's classed as far right. Just hang on a minute. Yaxley Lennon, who's funded by Israel and is pro-Israel, right? He's far right as well. How does work?
They've developed a different meaning for it. Far right now means anti-establishment. You don't agree with the establishment. It used to mean, if you're far right, that you were a racist thug.
Yeah. Would you say people like Robinson are controlled?
Definitely. I don't know. I mean, Mannion, on the surface of it, I would say, yeah, 100%. I don't trust any fucker.
No, I would say...
if you get that much attention... Think
even the people that are funding, it's funded by I find it strangely odd, because I don't think a lot of the people that follow him realize that it's funded by an Israeli NGO.
Exactly. Well, the fact that it's changed his name from Yaxley Lennon, I'm very suspicious of anyone who changes the name, by the way, because unless it's because you're not, or you're doing a
you've been in name. Even then. But even unless you're in hiding from, I don't know, some fucking killer. But
that's what I mean. If you don't want your name on a book and you want to use a pseudonym, I can kind of get that. Or you change it because you're an actor and you wanted to, you know, whatever, and your name didn't sound right. I can get that a little bit. It's still weird, but changing it just because you're some kind of like right wing figurehead makes no sense. And you chose a name that sounds as British could be, other than John Smith.
What you're saying, Yaxley Lennon doesn't sound.
Didn't really, does it? Didn't have that same ring to it. Just Joe Robinson. You know what I mean?
And then they're so they've got all this going on. Then you've got Trump, right? You've got Trump,
savior of the modern age.
Yeah, Trump, savior of the modern age, saying if Hamas don't release all the prisoners, basically that place is going to get flattened. I don't know what they're going to flatten. Maybe there's a more flattened.
It's going to be a ditch instead of a flattened.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a massive reservoir. We talk about going back last year. I look at last year and the thing that stands out to me is the flattening of Gaza, right? And it's not about whether people, what religion people are. You know, it's not about that. Anyway, I'm not even going to talk about that.
It's legitimized genocide.
Yeah.
But why are Russia evil and Israel are good? Why is the when actually Israel are committing genocide on a larger scale than Russia and the transparent no footage war?
Well, also what I would note as well is that a lot of the Tommy Yaxley Lennon followers, and I'll use that as an example, I'm not saying all of them, are very pro British Empire. Or union, how Britain used to be great and all this type of stuff, and look what we did around the world. Well, we committed genocide as well.
Yeah.
You know, we weren't spreading peace and love. The East India Company went in there to rob, rape and pillage.
I love this country, but there's right and wrong. And We've always been the bad guys, and we still are, unfortunately. Mm.
Yeah,
Mean you're unpatriotic. I just want the country to be good and do the right thing.
Yes,
all the time. That's what I want. That's patriotism, isn't it? Not just blindly agreeing with everything these dickheads in power say. Why would you agree with anything that the fucking pig eyes the hammer or Blobbish Johnson say? Why would you agree with anything or Rat Boy Sunak? Does that make me unpatriotic? Does it bollocks?
Yeah, and also I'll. My son said today something quite profound. How come when all the protesters were outside BBC, it wasn't on BBC News? Yeah, everything Tommy Robinson does,
exactly,
is on BBC News.
So he's there for a reason. More pantomime, isn't it? You're literally watching more of the pantomime.
Well, that's what look. I hope he's a nice guy. I don't know the bloke.
No, me neither. I've never listened to him, if I'm honest. The only thing I've heard about him is what other people have told me. I never really cared or got involved in that.
And the strange thing is, talking about immigration, allowing thousands of people in for no reason whatsoever, I couldn't agree more. But then it goes to another place.
But like I said, they're not coming over on dinghies, are they?
No. Well, and that's what the people say. People say, stop them dinghies. I saw a sign up. Somebody were holding a sign up. Stop the dinghies. And I'm thinking, did how many people actually come on dinghies?
Yeah.
It's not fucking It's a Knockout.
Fucking hell. Yeah, that's just more.
Yeah.
Sure.
So the Earth's surface temperatures, Chris, rose. It was the warmest on record, according to those purveyors of truth, NASA.
Right.
Yeah. Temperatures in 2024 were 2.3 degrees Fahrenheit warmer above the agency's 20th century baseline,
right,
which tops records set in 2023.
So it's getting warmer every year.
A good baseline. I used to like a good baseline.
So it's getting warmer every year. I'm going to run down streaming.
Every year, yeah.
It's streaming.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you get that thermometer out of that oven? Oh, it's warmest year on record. Fantastic. Another year.
You can always trust NASA.
Yeah. You always trust NASA. The US, right, have stopped the 9/11 guilty pleas are delayed after US government objects. So apparently, the US is trying to stop the mastermind of 9/11. I thought that were Osama bin Laden.
I thought we'd got him.
Yeah, I thought we'd already got all them people. Now we've got this guy who looks like some off Hobbit.
He looks, that's a bit like, he doesn't look real, does he? No. We've already got Bin Laden and we dumped him in sea within an hour of killing.
He's not the mastermind.
The most wanted man on the planet, we just dumped him in sea because that's what his religious beliefs were.
Yeah. Imagine if you were with Magnus Magnusson. What's your chosen specialised subject? 9/11. Who are you? I'm the mastermind of 9/11.
You don't look like the mastermind of anything. Yeah.
No. He's the mastermind of it. He's the mastermind of putting holograms into a building. Okay, Shall we move on, Chris? Shall we introduce our guest? I actually pronounced his name wrong, which fortunately, he weren't actually in anywhere next to me because he's a black belt kickboxer and jiu-jitsu expert and whatever, taekwondo and...
Get the fuck out of you.
Basically, Chris, you got that right. Punch seven bells of shit into you. But he's a nice guy. He's a nice guy.
Like, yeah, lovely.
Like most of these guys who are trained MMA fighters. Yeah.
Nothing to prove.
They train not to fight. Yeah. Matt Bajoski's son, Nico, is the same thing. He's the same. What a lovely lad he is. Nice, calm. And I remember him telling me, he cut him up or something happened in car and this guy got out of his car and started threatening him, blah, 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 blah. And Nico said, look, I don't want to fight you. He says, come to my gym. It's around there. He went, you Nico Bajerski? And he went, yeah. And he went, all right, I'll shake your hand, man. Blah, blah.
Scream.
Didn't want to take him on. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, if you know you've got that training, you don't need to prove of it.
No, no. Our guest is called Earl Jesse. I actually called him Jess. I didn't want to call him Jesse because up here, when somebody calls you a big Jesse, yeah. Anyway, I didn't say that Earl really, but I did. and he's not really an Earl either.
He's the deputy leader. Nice bloke. Nice bloke.
Yeah, top guy. Yeah, same haircut as me. Follicle challenged. Not like Christian Black Nicholson haircut. Three strands.
Clinging on.
Cling on. He's a deputy leader and promotions officer of the Freedom Alliance, which is a political party. He stood for to be an MP in Newbury. Obviously, he didn't win. Not because he's not good enough to win, just simply because he would never have won, would he? We never have got in. I like the slogan here. Let's put MPs on minimum wages and watch how fast they change things.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. Because if you were a real bastion for change, you'd do it for minimum wage. That's how good-hearted. I'm not saying it has to be minimum wage, but that's how good-hearted people do stuff, isn't it? They don't do it for money. They do it, you know, like the old deer in the charity shop. They're doing it because they care and they want to help the community, you know. And I might have mentioned this before, but there's a place in. I remember seeing this on TV years ago. And every year the mayor, it's like a tradition now, and it's a bit of a joke. I might have mentioned it on here.
Joe, we didn't wear Boris Johnson.
But it goes back to when they used to get into power, they'd weigh them the year after, and if they put too much weight on them, they got kicked out again. Because when you're going back to the old days when, you know, food was food, and if you, you know, if you had more money, you'd eat more fucking cream buns when they were a bit delicacy. So they literally weigh them in the street, and if they're over a certain weight for whether they were before, they get kicked out. I know it's all a joke now, but you can see the reality of why they did that back then, can't you?
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Yeah. Anyway, Earl didn't need weighing because he obviously keeps himself fit.
But they could do the same thing with the bank accounts, couldn't they? Do you know what I mean? But
they are. They're empty in hours. They're empty in hours. They're not about putting taxes up again, Chris.
Yeah. Fucking shit show, isn't it?
Anyway, if you remember a couple of months ago, I think it was November time, we did a podcast about a chap who stood up in Cambridge University. The actual date of the meeting was 17th of October. He was invited in there to a debate that we're having. We'll call it a debate. It wasn't really a debate. It was called "This House Would Make Vaccines Mandatory." And what you had was a load of students and professors talking about, they had a for and against, how they would mandate vaccines, and some were against mandating vaccines. But even the people who were against mandating vaccines were actually pro-vaccine. Mm. So it weren't even a debate. There were only Earl who was anti-vaccine and pro-choice.
Yeah,
That
was sent to us by someone who listens to Sheep Farm. So thanks for that. I can't remember who it was now because it was so long ago. It was like last year, wasn't it?
I'll tell you. Yeah, it was. And his mate, Master Gale, who is his, I think he's his kickboxing and taekwondo master, coach, he put him in touch with us.
No, what I mean is,
If you're listening, Master Gale, thank you very much. But yeah, somebody did send the video over to you to listen to, didn't
they? The initial video of the university, Cambridge University thing. That's how it started.
But yeah, we called "This House Would Make Vaccines Mandatory." I hope you enjoy the chat with him. We did a 2-hour chat. We've got part one for non-members, part two, if you want to listen to part two, that's for members. So it'd be split in half. This bit's added on to the first part, so we've got, another half an hour? So there you go. So I'm going to put the video as well onto YouTube on our second channel, and I'll put the link in the description of this podcast for the video. So if you want to watch the full videos, we do play some of the audio of the videos, but the full video was about well over an hour long. So I cut it down to 2-minute segments, and I put the full video, full transcripts of what we, full videos of what we used in on YouTube. So I'll put the shortcut there, and anybody who wants to watch it, you can watch it. All right then. I hope you enjoy our conversation with Earl Jesse. He was a great chap, and hopefully we'll get him on at some point again, because he had a lot of other good things to say as well. It wasn't just about this conversation about this. Well, this was about that, but he's got a lot of good things to say about other subjects as well. And I would gladly have him back on. So, yeah. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you. If you're going to join us in part two, we'll see you there. If you're not, we'll see you next week.
Bye. Have a nice weekend. Bye.
All right. Welcome back to Sheep Farm Podcast. This is episode 210, I do believe. 210. I'm still here. And Chris is still here. We're dealing with Clown World on steroids. And today we've got a guest in who we spoke about, actually, in one of our earlier episodes a couple of months ago. I think it was in October time. Chris found a video on YouTube of some poor guy having to stand in the lion's den in Cambridge University.
So someone sent it as fact, and it was the Cambridge University vote on whether a vaccine should be mandated or not. And we did a little show talking about it. It was really interesting. I listened to the whole thing, actually, because I was painting some sculptures or whatever. So I had quite a lot of time, and I just listened to the whole thing. And then there was only Earl at the end who stood up and was against it. Him and one other poor soul in the crowd. And he kind of lambasted. And then we talked about it, and we're like, that guy. But I think
you mentioned his name, so I'll introduce him. We've got Earl Jess, who is also deputy leader, I might have got this wrong, and promotions officer of the Freedom Alliance.
Yes.
Welcome, Earl.
Hiya. It's Earl Jesse, by the way.
Earl Jesse, sorry.
I know, it's absolutely fine.
And it's not a real Earl, it's just his name.
Well, I was actually named after it. My father worked for an Earl, so he named me after the title, but that's a whole different story.
Well, that's an interesting story to start with.
And when you emailed us, Earl, you said we referred to you as not the only... What did we say? Because I didn't recall.
Not the prick. I think the title was Not the Prick.
The only one that wasn't a prick. But we're going to talk about that in a little while. The debate, or they called it a debate, but it wasn't really a debate, at Cambridge University on the 17th of October 2024, and it was called This House Would Make Vaccines Mandatory. It seems like it wasn't a debate because they'd already made their mind up with that title.
Oh, yeah.
So, can you give us a bit of background? We were talking that you're a martial arts instructor.
Oh, I'm a practitioner and instructor. So, I've been training probably 22, 23 years now. Instructing for about 16 years. I started my initial martial art was traditional martial art, Taekwondo, ITF style. From there, I got into competing national, international. Managed to get on the world stage and get a gold in a team. So I achieved what I wanted to do in Taekwondo. And then I went on to become an instructor in the Taekwondo field or the Taekwondo arena. And then I moved into freestyle kickboxing. Fortunately, the association I'm with, PUMA, Professional Unification of Martial Arts, they have a branch or a wing of kickboxing. So I set up as a kickboxing instructor, and I've been doing that for about 16 years now, sort of personal training and kickboxing. And I've moved through sort of Brazilian jiu-jitsu, wrestling, and judo, boxing, Muay Thai, K1, and I've sort of done different things. Defense Lab, which is I don't know if you've seen Jack Reacher and obviously Man Begins, you know, all the sort of elbows, all that big heavy smashing. That's Defense Lab, basically. It comes from a martial art called Casey, the Spanish martial art. Or a Spanish street fighting art. So I moved from that into Krav Maga. So I'm a P3 instructor, P1, P2, P3 instructor for Krav Maga 2. I haven't set my schools up for Krav yet, but that's another story coming on.
Interestingly, I've got a good friend who's, I suppose you are as well, he's a black belt in Krav. In Shrewsbury.
Not too far.
Yeah, and there's a craft school, I think, in Halifax, where I live. It's recently opened, I'm saying over the last year or so. One thing I would say is that it's surprising how many, I call it MMA sort of sports people, are open-minded and into what we are going to be discussing, no doubt, over the next hour and a half.
Oh, yeah.
We've got a guy who comes on quite regular, Lee, haven't we, Chris? He's called Master Lee Hadsell. Matt Bajerski's son, who was a mate of ours who's got his own podcast, his son's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. He's got his own school in Halifax as well. And it seems to be a lot of people. There were a guy stood up at one of the major MMA fights in, I think it was France, and stood up and said something along the lines, fuck all globalists on the microphone.
There was another one that I think he was a Texan or country from America, and he stood up about the gender stuff about boys are boys, girls are girls. What are you talking about? This is nonsense. It's mental health issues. You know, he did another one. Even Dana White stood up against the whole ivermectin, didn't he? He was talking about he got shut down on social media.
That's right. Yeah, he did. Yeah. Anyway, so the reason you found out about us was by someone you know, wasn't it?
Yeah, the chairman. So the chairman of PUMA, the Professional Unification of Martial Arts, is Master Gale, and he's an avid fan of yours. And he, from one of his hobbies, one of his sort of pastimes, is riding his motorcycle and listening to podcasts. And you guys are, you know, one of his top listening sort of choices. And he knew about the Cambridge Union thing because I posted it and said, "Look, I'm going there. I've been invited." I didn't have a clue what I was walking into, really. But, well, I kind of understood something about it, but I didn't fully understand
the
territory that I was in, which is fine.
That was actually going to be my next question. Why the hell did you go there?
Yeah, we're going to talk about Cambridge in a bit, Chris. Let's save that question.
Anyway, Master Gale contacted me and said, well done, the Sheep Farm podcast guys, the brothers are talking about you. And I'm like, who are these guys? And I mean, I've been around on the you know, around this sort of a wake circle for many years. So lots of things pop up and disappear, as you probably are aware. I've kind of stopped listening to people and stopped consuming. I more produce things or go out and just act rather than sort of sit down and consume, because this, you know, that's like being an all-you-can-eat buffet. You've got to step away at some point and digest what you've got.
100%, yeah.
Contaminate.
I think we're at that stage where all I do is research. So, and we produce our own podcasts. I don't really listen to many people myself now. I don't think Chris does. I listen to a few.
Probably
more than me.
Yeah, because I paint my sculpture, so I have quite a lot of free time. I just have someone in the background.
It's good to have that sort of keep the toe in the water, etc. I suppose there's two things: you're either a consumer or a producer. If you're producing, then you need to, you know, accumulate information, synthesize it. You need to digest it. You need to look through what's good, what's bad, or what you feel is worthy and unworthy, and then you put it to action. Even like making artwork, you go through the process. The final piece isn't always the great part, as the saying is, the road is better than the inn. Once you produce it, it's like you move on. And I don't know if I mentioned, I'm an artist too, by the way. So that's my academic background. But that's another story.
And that's another thing you find as well. A lot of artists. It seems to be a lot of sort of like mixed martial arts, a lot of artists, a lot of people who were in business, sort of like me, uneducated, who made their way up the ladder on their own, you know, told they were going to be a failure, etc. People who had the ability to think for themselves and think themselves in and out of issues, which I suppose the martial arts training, that's what that does. It helps you think in and out of issues, doesn't it? I suppose. Well,
when you step in the ring, yeah, I mean, sometimes you're up against opponents, you've got no idea of their skill level. And you've got to be able to think on your feet millisecond of millisecond, you know, as you're retaining punches, you're sponging, you're soaking up punches and kicks, you're grappling, you're throwing. You have to think and then try and work out how to play the game, because they're trying to get you to play their game. You want them to play your game. And it's that sort of fencing of ideas. And it's like a physical chess.
I started lifting weights, numbnut weights, so quite strong lifting weights. I wish I'd have got into one of the martial arts. I don't have many regrets, but it's one of the things I wish I'd done, let's just say. I think it'd have suited my mentality, especially Krav. I think Krav, from my mate telling me about what he were doing, I think it'd have suited me and my build. But anyway, that's another story.
Well, I didn't start till I was 26.
Yeah, well, I'm 55, so I'm a bit behind that one.
Well, the thing with Krav and that, it's not a martial art as such. It's a system of sort of concepts and ideas, right. You know, principles, and you put the principles into action, and you work with what you've got. I forgot to mention, I'm also doing Sistema, the Russian martial art as well.
Right, yeah. So you're doing a few martial arts then?
Oh yeah, I'm always like you said, researching and stuff. So I'm consuming my martial art practice.
I might have to take up sniper rifling then, if there's a load of lunatics like you walking around.
I'm going to say, people like you terrify me, because I'm a mouthy bastard. I'm not a fighter at all. I just worry sometimes I'm going to mouth off at the wrong person.
But I train so I don't have to fight. That's my theory.
Yeah.
I train as hard as I can so I don't have... I suppose when you embody so much information, like say martial arts, there's a certain way that it kind of changes your sort of biosphere, your kind of toroidal field, your energy, and you have a look and a walk and an energy about you. It puts off predators, I spent most of my life, or from primary school to secondary school to college, even in part of university, being bullied, and that's the reason why I turned all that, I amalgamated all that anger and frustration bottled up. I just, you know, alchemized it into gold and just turned it into something else rather than, I went through a lot of hatred and anger and a lot of other stuff, but you know, you sort of pop out this kind of golden nugget and you realize, actually, I just need to deal with myself. I'm the one that's
100%
the attention. Yeah. I'm magnetizing people towards me. So if
I let off my steam on Boris Johnson and Queer Starling.
hate properly, you know, hate like
yeah, stuff. Yeah, yeah. You've got some.
Can I ask you something though? Because I've got a friend, and I do believe in that. Like that, some people, like you're saying about people, give off that aura of bloodlust or victim or whatever. You know, so you do attract certain people. But a good example, me and my mate and my brother knows him. We used to go to pubs, and he was always getting into fights. I never got into fights at all, ever. And we'd be stood in a bar when we were teenagers or whatever. and he'd be next to me, and all of a sudden he'd end up in some kind of altercation. And I used to say to him, how did that happen? You're stood next to me. And I never get into fights. And it's not like he's like mouthing off at anyone. He just attracted this, like, and he liked a little scrap as well, by the way. He wasn't like a victim, but he just, people just come up want to fight him. It was very strange.
I had a mate as well, like, exactly. We're similar sort of characters, weren't they? I remember him going down for a taxi with a. I remember him going down for a taxi with a crate of beer, coming backwards, up, walking backwards back up the stairs with a guy shouting at him. And I think he's only been in there 30 seconds. How could he get to a point where a taxi guy who you want a taxi from is wanting to kick your head in? How did you got a crate of beer in your hand? How does that work?
You just think that would never happen to me. How has that happened to him? I don't understand. Yeah. And we were stood next to each other 5 minutes ago.
He might have walked in and said, "Didn't I shag your mum?" You know, and
he might have done. Yeah, he probably did do, actually. Knowing them two, they probably did say something like that. anyway, we digress. Yes. You were talking about Abby Roberts, was it?
Give it a bit of foundation. So last night we had a Freedom Alliance executive meeting. We have one usually every Wednesday night or every 2 weeks. So we haven't had one for about a month because of the festive crazy season and all that. So we had quite a long meeting last night, and one of the guys called Martin, he put up, I mentioned about Sheep Farm podcast, and he put a little blurb in there and said his wife listens to you guys. She's like a big fan of yours. He's just moved house. He's retired. So they're pretty much building a house from scratch up in Yorkshire. And so they've got a bit of time on their hands. They're sort of doing bits and bobs. Anyway, he mentioned about, obviously, you guys. And then he said, did you know about the change of the stats? Because when you went into the Cambridge Union, you voted your opinion with your A's, your no's, and your abstain. And then when you left after you heard the debate, after you heard the sort of pros and cons of whatever people were talking about, you voted again, and they said they have two different tallies. Well, apparently, when people left, the tally was incorrect, and it was spoken about on Abby Roberts' show about last week or maybe a week before. And she announced apparently that the people against the motion had gone up, and it was like 60-40 or something. So I don't know how that got skewed and changed, but. You know, these debates, I mean, Exeter University, Oxford University, Cambridge, and all these sort of interesting, these sort of large academic societies are trying to skew the numbers, it would appear. But is it the people inside? Is it, you know, the people at the top of the chain doing this?
Is it the algorithm?
Well, you get a disc. You just get a disc. You pick a disc up and put it into a bucket. So it's not, it's a very manual thing to do.
So that's a deliberate action, then, isn't it? It's not something that could be an accident, really.
Yeah. Well, I heard in the bar, I mean, I think I mentioned, if you go onto the YouTube channel, the actual the live stream debate that's posted, it says the A's were 59, the No's were 159 for yes, 133 for no, and abstain were 57. But when we were in the bar, they talked about the abstains was 90-something. So there was a larger number of people that abstained, which may have then contributed towards this thing that Abby Roberts said. I mean, I've yet to sort of look into it, so I can't prove or say it's true. But if it was mentioned on the Abby Roberts show, there must be some depth in it. I don't think she would just say that without looking into it any deeper.
But as far as them students who were there are concerned, and the YouTube channel's concerned, they vote for mandated vaccines. So
yeah, 159 and 133,
and the title of the thing,
everything. And most kids who are there will have gone away thinking that they voted yes to mandate vaccines, even if the figures are right.
Yeah, but it's about 18 people different. It's not massive, so it's probably what 58 to sort of 42%.
But if you watch that thing, though, you would think that 98% want mandated vaccines.
Yeah. Especially that little ginger kid who stood up.
Oh, yeah, he was an interesting lad.
But anyway.
He's got some stuff going on, some childhood traumas there.
Yeah, it looked like it. But before we get, we're going to get on to the Cambridge stuff, but I wanted to explain about the Freedom Alliance. How it began and what's it doing at the moment, etc.
The Freedom Alliance. I mean, I'm going to tell you my sort of understanding of what happened. So there was a guy called Leons Davis who recently passed away. He had a brain tumor. It was him and his friend, his cycling partner, Jonathan Tilt, who I believe originally set up the Freedom Alliance with a lady called Di. Diane McCann from Scotland, and they basically put it together. They were the self-employed poi people that weren't helped during the lockup. So they set up this kind of, I suppose, rallying against the government and what they were doing, destroying their businesses. You know, and I myself, you know, I've been running my business for sort of 10 years, and all of a sudden, bang, I got no help at all. But they set this up. They put it through. They got the political status. And it sort of bolted on from there, really. About 2 years after its inception, after doing all the protests and being frontline, standing up to the TSG, you know, the psychos in London, and being locked up for 26 hours in Leeds and locked up in Sheffield and stuff for protests, and trying to fine me £10,000 for all this ridiculous stuff, being out of my house. I was in a couple of meetings, and we had decided we were going to infiltrate a political party. We were going to get inside someone like UKIP, and we were going to just basically get inside and try and, you know, tilt the system as best we could. I had no belief in politics. My idea of politics was like voting was like is the adult version of writing a letter to Santa Claus. You know, it's kind of pointless. You know, but yeah. There was a part of me that I had to really look into, which was a cognitive dissonance. Because I've been taught to hate politics. I've been taught that if anyone talks about it, I have an aversion towards it. Mm. And I thought, well, where's that come from? Because I can't understand the seed of where that was planted. And all through my primary school, secondary school and college, I looked at it and thought, well, it's the people around me. Was it the parental, you know, upbringing? Was it my friends? And I couldn't place it. So I thought, well, this is one thing I've never, ever looked into. I've never actually looked into politics. However, if you're aware, like most people are, politics is in everything. It's an insidious beast. It has literally got its tentacles in everything and anything. You know, and look at what's happening now with the school children, the education, the sex education, you know, the financial issues with like, you know, the private schools, the Steiner schools.
I don't know. A transvestite doing a slut drop in an infant school. I don't really see what the problem is with that.
Yeah, a pair of shears would sort it out, wouldn't it? But anyway, So anyway, the long sort of rounding that up, the Freedom Alliance existed. It was on one of the meetings. I was actually at a meeting with Richard Tice from the Reform Group.
Okay.
Money man, simple money man. I didn't trust him at all. Mm. Reform. I don't know if you know, they had about £1 million or something when they first started. Then the next year, they had £23 million come out of nowhere. You know, if you look at their audits, it was incredible. You knew they were part of the system. You know, anyway, so I ended up joining the Freedom Alliance just as a member, and I was just handing out leaflets of protests, really. And as it went on, I got us in the papers in Bristol. I got big posters put up, and it was just fun, really, for me, just getting out and having a reason to carry on protesting. And then I realised in I think 2022, just to January 2022, we went to London, and it was at House of Parliament, and there were 118 arrests, and most of the figureheads, most of the sort of leaders of the groups, like the Stand Up X groups and stuff, and other independent sort of protest groups, people were just being carted off. We were being thrown around like ragdolls, jumped on, and I got cornered by six police officers, one sergeant and two TSGs on this road. And I'd just been in a meeting a week before with a guy called Dave Eden, who was the ex-chief constable, chief sergeant of the Metropolitan Police. And it was a common law and maritime law education project. It's a three-day project. And he said, if you give your name, your date of birth and your address, it reduces the offence down to a summary offence and they have to let you go. And I was just about to have a fight with about nine guys. And I realized this has gone nuts. All I'm doing is walking around and I'm about to be jumped on and beaten up. And I just said my name, date of birth, and my address. And the sergeant went, okay, drop it. And the six guys jumped in his van and drove off. And I thought, wow. So I was sort of took a step back, and then I realized that the protesting, for my protesting days were kind of done at that point. So I just started working behind the scenes, doing promotions for the Freedom Alliance, doing online stuff on Telegram. I'm banned from Facebook, WhatsApp, Instagram. I can't get any accounts. They banned me back in 2020 in Facebook. I'm literally banned.
That's like a call to arms or that, isn't it? I mean, YouTube, we're heavily censored on YouTube for some of the documentaries we made back in 2020, 21, 22. To me, I don't really care. I never chase that type of fame anyway. But anyway.
No. So the Freedom Alliance now, where I've been working with them, I got nominated as deputy leader. And that leads us into the whole sort of Cambridge Union situation. So our chairman, our ex-chairman, was contacted by the Cambridge Union to come and talk about a motion. And it was to do with bodily sovereignty. It was quite ambiguous. They wanted to talk about abortion. They wanted to talk about gender roles. They wanted to talk about vaccines. And he refused. He said, I'm not interested. It's too convoluted. And then he was expelled. And then the new chairman took over, and the Cambridge Union, because they were using the chairman at Freedom Alliance. So it just went to the next chairman. And they requested, with that motion, this House will mandate vaccines. And the chairman then contacted me and said, look, do you want to go and do a little speech at Cambridge Union? I said, yeah, why not? Let's have some fun. Not thinking anything about it, not knowing how good this place was. And, you know, the oldest debating society in the world of 1815, they've been doing it. And it wasn't until about a week before that I really understood what I was walking into. I at the time, I had just run for MP in my area. And I was also training for my third degree kickboxing black belt. So I'd just done my pre-grading and massively physical and mental exhaustion. And I was going for my grading. So I had my grading the weekend before the Saturday before the Thursday I did the debate. So I was just wired. I was completely spread too thin. So I didn't really understand too much about what I was heading into. And then, I rocked up and I saw the, I saw what I was walking into.
The Lion's Den. Well, just as an overview of the whole thing that I watched on that on YouTube, the whole sort of people standing up and the whole sort of circus, if you like. It was set up from the outset. Even the people that were meant to be on the nay side or no side or whatever, no mandated vaccines, even they were pro-vaccine.
Yes. Yeah.
Apart from you, obviously.
Yeah.
And, it were an odd situation, but that actually sums up when you watch mainstream media. They have someone who's for it and someone who else is for it, but talks in a slightly different direction.
Yes,
but both end up at the same place.
Mm. Yeah, it was definitely shepherded in a certain direction. Like Helen Bedford, I contacted her about 2 days before, and the leader of Freedom Alliance, Kath, she did a background check on her, just like Instagram and, you know, Twitter. And her last picture on Instagram or Twitter was a cup that said, you know, that keep calm, stay safe, get vaccinated. That was a picture on her profile. And I'm like, but she's meant to be against mandatory vaccines. And we were like, so I just emailed her and said, can we have a chat on the phone? And we phoned up, and she'd already done a background check on me. And she goes, well, I know, before we even kicked off, she was like, I know your stance. I know what you're going to say. And I was like, whoa, hang on a minute. And she goes, yes, I am pro-vaccine and I'm proud of it. And I was like, wow, okay. I thought, this is fun. And then
why would you be proud of being pro-vaccine? I don't understand why you need to be proud of something. You know, that's where it's just all brainwashing and egotism.
Where she was pro-vaccine, but yeah. Not pro-mandate, man. It's different.
Yes, that's it.
There's a difference, sorry.
Same as the student.
Where's the line, though? Where's the line in the sand? What I've done is, I mentioned this to you before, I've got three people interviews that we'll play. And I've also cut some of your, when you stood up, I cut some of your stuff into a couple of minute segments if we get to play it all, so we can comment on it as we're going through. What was the day like, though? Was it nerve-wracking?
The drive up there was nice. It was about just over a three-hour drive. By the way, I'm gonna big up Cambridge Union. They looked after me really well.
Right.
So they paid for my fuel. They paid for my overnight stay. Put me up in a lovely. It's like an old church building that's become like a hotel. So it was all breakfast was paid for. When I arrived, they took me out for a drink. We had a 3-course meal, and it's specific for my dietary requirements as well, which is lovely. It was in a candlelit room, silver service. We had like endless glasses of wine and white wine, you name it, whatever you wanted. Alessio, the guy, he's the main speaker of the union. He's the guy up on the sort of throne. He was lovely, really, really, amenable guy. Helped me out, took me to the hotel and stuff. And everybody was really nice. So it was hard to get that across when you're watching.
Isn't that, though, the sort of British Empire? We're all nice. It's not cricket. But just kill that 100,000 people there, them savages on the island. That is that type of thing, though, isn't it? We're all very nice, but we'll kill you.
Service with a smile. But
yes,
I mean, they were really polite. And I mean, yes, you're probably right on that part. They were just really nice. I didn't feel any sort of animosity towards me or any aggression towards me leading up to the talk or the speech. It was people, there's different, you've got different, if you believe in the class system. So I was purposely at the dinner table, putting my elbows on there, eating with my hands and stuff, and waiting for someone to ask me about, well, you shouldn't do that. Well, who made the rules up? And why are those rules, why are they instigated on me? Why do I need to follow these rules? Who's my authority? So
we should have seen our daddy, an old farmer.
It was my dad, like a pig at a trough.
Yeah, well, like a wood chipper.
Yeah.
But that's what made it so scary, I think, all that thing, because these were just normal kids, and they're in Cambridge University, so they've got this, delusion of authority. And these are going to be the next prime ministers and whoever running the country. And it was just frightening how they just agreed that vaccines should be mandated. Go on, Sorrel.
Yeah, I was going to say the thing is, if you can watch the terrain change at the moment, I don't think there's going to be a prime minister the next couple of years. I don't think we're going to have a government the next couple of years. I don't feel that most of these systems and societies and these so-called class structures, they're going to be around in the way that they exist now and they've existed. You know, Rome fell, Spartan fell, you know, the Phoenicians fell, the Sumerians fell. They've all fallen. Mm. And there's usually a big pop. And it gets to the night is always darkest before the dawn. It's this year, from my belief, my prophecy is this year is going to be a really dark year. It's going to be a tough one. You're going to have to tie yourself to the mast and just weather the storm. But a lot of things are going to drop around you. And it's going to be quite, pull your family and your friends close. It's going to be an interesting year, but we've already survived the worst part of it, which is 2020. Mm. The next bit is just going to be visual and very emotional.
When you think back to 2020, we're coming up to 5 years now.
Yes.
5 years since what happened. It's still very fresh in my mind because of obviously the work that we've done, no doubt you yourself and people listening, what actually happened. Not just what they did lock everything down, but the reactions of neighbours and friends and family and things like that. And the people that aren't even in your life anymore that were there in 2019.
Yeah.
So much has changed in 5 years. It's apart from shooting bombs, firing bullets and bombs, it's very similar to probably what happened in World War One and World War Two.
Well, we're in a war. We're definitely in a war. We've been in a war for your mind and your soul for the last 20 odd years. This is the beginning. I mean, 2020 was the battlefield was opened, and the way that I love 2020 in a really weird, dark sort of sense of humor way, because I've been walking around in a war, knowing that the war's going on, and everyone else is just oblivious.
Yeah.
2020 hit, and I'm out of the parapet, so I'm walking around, and all of a sudden, everyone I see, I know they're awake. because they're not in the parapets, they're not hiding in the trenches. I'm like, ah, brother, hey, sister, how you doing? I'm in protest with 20 people from all around the country. We're meeting in London. None of us knew each other, but we all knew we're on the same page.
Yeah, it was an interest. That was one of the most interesting periods that where you met people. People disappeared out of your life because they didn't want to listen to you talking about what we were talking about. And then other people gravitated towards you. Very interesting time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my Facebook account, I had about just over 1,000 friends, Facebook friends, let's call it that. And I had about 3 subscribers or 3 followers. By mid-2020, I had 5,000 friends, 5,000 followers.
Yeah,
yeah. 3 posts a day, different things, all about what's going on. And I was just pulling out all my files from all the stuff that I record and I watch and I sort of log. And I'm just putting all this stuff up. I got banned. I released 3 posts. Like, one was about the American Indian Holocaust. One was a poem about, you know, there was 250 million American Indians and then all of a sudden there's 250,000. There was a poem by one of the Native Americans. I put a video up of V for Vendetta. And I think if you guys remember the film, there's 3 parts in the film. One is about 3 waters where they poison the waters. One is where they kill the primary school children. And the other one is about this virus that's been man-made, but you don't know it's been man-made. And I put the points together with a Boris Johnson talk. And he talks in the House of Parliament and he says, What if this COVID gets in the water? What if it gets to a primary school? And he says this. It's a 16-second cut. And I put it on this post. And within an hour, I was blocked from Facebook. It was gone.
Yeah. We did a lot of work. We did a series. I don't know if you've seen it. It's actually on YouTube. Some things that are allowed on YouTube. We call it Huxley's Brave New World Order. I think we've done 10 episodes or 9 episodes so far, about 2 or 3 hours long each of them. So they're quite long episodes. And we covered V for Vendetta in there because Alan Moore was a dark occultist. Chris is into comics, by the way. I don't know if you are, but Chris is into comics. And so we covered him because he was a LSD user, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, V for Vendetta.
If you go through comic books, I mean, you understand about the egregore, you know, egregore?
Yeah.
So, and you understand about the karmic retribution. If you're going to hurt someone and you say, look, I'm going to break your nose, and you tell them, and they go, yeah, whatever, and you break their nose, there's no karmic retribution because you've informed them and they've had a chance to consent or not consent. But if you walk up and break someone's nose, there's karmic retribution going to happen. So you might turn around and fall and hit your head on the pavement. So the way that I understand, the way the occultists understand, is they have to tell us. They have to tell us what they're going to do, how they're going to do it, and what's going to happen. But they don't tell us in one story. They tell it in broken bits, in media, in films, in poetry.
Yeah. And that's the essence of legalese, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
The essence of legalese is coming up with words like invalid and invalid, which are the same word, if you like, but they mean 2 different things.
Yeah. Like as I say in the Cambridge Union, you know, the word summons means invitation. The words must means may. They're synonymous to each other, but it's legalese. It's like Russian to English. It's not the same language. I studied it at uni and I'm trying to understand court papers for copyright, plagiarism, slander, libel, and understand how you can take someone else's artwork and then use it and re-edit it. And we had to understand how court cases were won and lost. So it was a small part of our course, of our university course, but I got really into that, and I love the legalese side of things. I was like, wow, this is fun.
Yeah, it'd be like opening a labyrinth for somebody like you, that.
Yes.
All right, shall I play one of these videos? Obviously, people will just hear the audio, but it doesn't really matter. I think the first lady I'm going to play is a young lady who was actually on your side. She's against it, Aisha Harris.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
What was Aisha like?
She was lovely. We had a little bit of a debate about Andrew Wakefield, about things causing autism. And this is something I found out. So the BJM, the British Journal of Medicine, only has 1 paper of Andrew Wakefield. They've refused any other papers by him. He's got, I don't know, 10, 20 papers that he's released to prove his not his theory, but actually factually how autism is caused by vaccines.
Wait, it's far too reasonable, is it, Andrew Wakefield? Why wouldn't they refuse him?
Yeah. Anyway, it turns out they've only got 1 paper, and that 1 paper has been attacked in the British Journal of Medicine And then all the medical students, by the way, she's a medical student.
Yeah,
part of the medical system as well. They're taught that he was doing it for money. He was doing it for financial gain.
Right.
You do realize he was marginalized. He lost all his his powers to be a doctor, to be a healthcare worker. He lost everything. So if he was doing it for the money, he would have needed to keep all that, those statuses. And she was like, that's a good point. And we had this like quite an interesting chat. And I said, you need to start looking at Andrew Wakefield behind the scenes and look at how he's still writing books. He's still pushing these ideas. And also with the evidence that he's proved. And I said, there's a thing called Vaccine Nation, which is one of the oldest, I think, documentaries about how vaccines have damaged people. And it goes into like the triplets, when three babies were taken in and all of them had the vaccine and all of them had autism, literally every day. And it's like, well, apparently it's coincidental that a child has like some sort of brain damage or some sort of issue. But three children from the same family all have the same issue. And it's a base point in the understanding of vaccines, heavy metal damage, blood-brain barrier, you know, the gut system, the poisoning, aluminium, pineal gland. It goes into a whole load of stuff. And
yeah, it's a good video, is that?
And so I talked to Aisha about this, and she was like, I didn't know this. They just live in this kind of fabricated bubble, and it's all supported by other academics. And when you have academics on pedestals, you don't look past them. It's just the way they're taught, and it's kind of a scary world in some ways.
Yeah, because we're going to play a couple of these academics in a sec after this one, and you could tell how they revered these two, the people around them. But yeah, let's play Aisha and listen to Aisha. It's going to be a couple of minutes, this, so if you want to make a few notes, we can have a... Chris.
Now we turn to the second paper speaker of the opposition, which is Aisha Harris. Aisha is a fourth-year student at Queen's College studying medicine. She won the right to speak through open audition. You have the ears of the House.
Thank you. Vaccines are incredible. We've just heard a lot about why. So just to add my own little bit, they're probably the most significant achievement in the history of the world, having saved 154 million lives in the past 50 years alone. Smallpox is gone, polio is nearly gone, and the COVID vaccine stopped the pandemic in its tracks only after just 1 year. And I'm so proud of humanity for these things. It really is a great mark of modernity. But my love of vaccines is precisely why I stand here tonight on the side of the opposition. I will address these issues first as a liberal, focusing on ideas of bodily autonomy and self-determination. But as we shall see when shaping public policy, ideology alone is not enough. We must also prioritise pragmatic, evidence-based decisions. So my second point will be one of practicality. Vaccine mandates simply don't work, especially in the long term. And lastly, if we do not mandate vaccinations, how do we encourage uptake? I present a few reforms I believe will restore trust in the state, scientific institutions, and the system as a whole. So fundamentally, I believe that the individual is best placed to make decisions about their own lives. One of the biggest contributors to human happiness is autonomy and self-direction. And to live in a liberal democracy such as the UK is such a privilege that the majority of the world does not enjoy. However, there must be some limits to individual freedom. And as the great John Stuart Mill once said, your freedom to swing your fist ends where my nose begins. And it is the job of the state to enforce this, to protect my nose from swinging fists. So, is your decision to not get vaccinated a swing to my nose? What of your freedom to exist in society free from fear of infection? And what about the liberties of the immunocompromised? My response is this. Must it be the responsibility of each individual to sacrifice...
And she's against it.
I know.
Terrifying.
It's mandatory, but yeah.
Yeah, she's against mandatory vaccines. Mm. And that was the first 2 years of her speech. Yeah, it is, Chris, yeah, yeah.
She's got some interesting points, because the smallpox thing, you're aware about. I was in Morocco with my partner, and we were talking about polio vaccines. And, you know, the success of when polio was first discovered, and it was down to, I think it was down to about 30%. It was almost over, and then the vaccines were administered, and then you had the is it flamidamide? I forget the term.
Formaldehyde.
Oh no, formaldehyde is for dead bodies. When
Born
with deformed arms and legs.
Oh yeah, flamidamide. Yeah.
And it was to do with the vaccines, and we were talking about a film called Time Bandits. Do you remember this one?
Yeah,
I remember Time Bandits.
Yeah, and it was the I forget the term, the correct political term. Is it dwarfs, pygmies, midgets? I can't.
You've offended someone there, anyway.
Yeah, you've offended. You've thrown a net over it all there, mate. If you'd have said tranny dwarves, maybe as well, you could have sort of scooped them in as well.
But if you think we were talking about it, and I said, I said to my partner, I said, have a little think about in the film industry. Do you see a lot more of people that are, you know, that are in those positions or born with those conditions? He's like, well, we don't know. I said, but that's because it's to do with the polio vaccines. I said, look at the way the polio vaccines were inserted into society. Look at the film industry. Look at the entertainment industry, even in the porn industry, by the way. You know, there was a lot of stuff happening, and then all of a sudden it's disappeared. Because polio vaccines aren't being given out anymore. Mm. And she was like, this is a really good point. So we did a little bit of base research on this and looked at timescales and things. And it's very, very few people that are born with that sort of, in essence, you can call it deformity.
Have you read a book called Dr. Mary's Monkey?
Dr. Mary? No, I have not. No.
You should read that. You'd like that. Yeah. Dr. Mary's Monkey by Ed Haslam.
Mary's Monkey.
I think flamidamide jab was just for morning sickness as well.
Yeah, it was meant to be for morning sickness, wasn't it?
Morning sickness, and then destroyed an entire generation.
The stuff that these chemical companies do is, you know, right at the top, it's just all about dark.
You know whose father introduced that into Britain, don't you?
Who was that?
Judge Jules.
Judge Jules' grandfather,
yeah.
Judge Jules, as in?
The DJ.
Oh, no way!
Yeah, Judge Jules' grandfather worked for, I'm going to get this wrong, but it's something like Allied Distillery, who had a pharmaceutical side, and they were the sole agents of the flamidamide drug.
Wow.
So he ended up jumping off a cliff.
The guy did?
Yeah. Judge Jules' granddad.
Well, or was he pushed?
Yeah, but there was a massive lawsuit going on at the time, so.
Oh, right, okay.
He's also a cousin of the chef, what they call him, Steen.
Rick Stein?
Rick Stein, yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, when they're in that sort of that clique, you start knowing these private school kids, they're all part of the cash cow system. They're all shepherded into positions in society. And
not just Jules, he's come up organically and plays records. Bollocks.
like you were saying, though, they're in this academic bubble. I mean, that girl seems perfectly nice, and she really believes in what she's saying because she loves vaccines, she says. So she thinks she's doing the right thing, but she's just in this academic bubble. Like you said, she didn't know any real detail about Andrew Wakefield.
I call
or
him.
Any of his real information, just what she said from BBC or whatever.
Yeah, everything's sort of every pillar of academia covers each other. They kind of like a what do you call it?
Circle walk.
academic Manchurian candidates.
Yeah,
well, that's what they are. They're academic Manchurian. They've been brainwashed. Been brainwashed by the professors there to talk this nonsense, and then they pass it on to the next people.
Well,
and
it's back in Greece, didn't it? Back in the 300, you know, the academic societies of the uni one, the versity of one, the university, and they were controlling the story, the narrative, and it was all about controlling the higher structures of society and keeping people down and keeping them up. So whatever story they tell you, it's like in the film Wag the Dog. And Robert De Niro says, he goes, and something happens on the TV. He goes, well, that's not true. And he goes, well, it is now because it was on TV. So, on TV, it's true. That's it. It's made it. It's too late.
I mean, she was the same figures there. They saved 130 million people's lives. It's just like these people, all they're doing is firing out, no research of their own, just firing out these statements that they've been told.
But also, Dom, she was regurgitating that truth, which is the vaccine gave us freedoms back, which was true.
Yes.
It didn't mean it works. It just meant if you took it, you could go and do whatever you wanted.
Well, you could fly abroad, yeah. Like I said, you could get on a plane like most of my family did. My mum was never, prior to the whole COVID, the scandemic, my mum, bless her, she's never flown out of England, never been on a plane. So I took my youngest brother to Tenerife. We had an amazing time. My younger brother's got special needs. He was born with difficulties, etc. But so I took him on his first holiday abroad. My mum loved the fact that he enjoyed himself so much. So she said, I want to go. So we booked the following year, 2020, to fly to Tenerife. And this was my two brothers, my brother's wife, my brother's kids, my mum and her partner. So there's six of us going, all booked up. And then obviously 2020 hit. And then the flights were just obviously banned and we got cancelled, et cetera. And we went over. And I said to the guys, this was before the vaccines were even sequenced. I said, if they pull out this thing where you've got to be vaccinated before you fly, I said, I'm not flying. I said, I'm telling you now, I'm pulling out. I said, I'm not having a vaccine just so I can go on holiday. And they were like, what are you talking about? I said, you'll see something about a passport or an ID. And then lo and behold, 6 months later, boom, it come out. You can't travel. So what did they all go and do? They all went and got vaccinated twice and they all got sick. I mean, they're still here, bless them. You know, my uncle got I've lost, I think, five family members now to the vaccine. Mm. None of COVID, by the way, including my own father, his wife's mum, all gone. You know, in hideous ways as well.
In 2020, our dad passed away, not of anything to do with jabs or all like that, but he would have had it, I've no doubt about it. But all of his, he had four mates that were close mates that used to come down to the farm. All of them have gone. All of them were jabbed multiple times. All of them are gone. The annihilation of a generation, of generations, actually, not just one generation, but
It's the thing is, when you're watching it, you're watching a car crash. Car crash in slow motion. And the downside is a lot of it emotionally can drag you down. I had to detach. I had to emotionally sit in my own space, mentally, spiritually, and detach from my family.
I remember when this kicked off, me and Chris were doing this podcast and we used to say, are we going to wake up in 5-10 years' time? Or Chris used to say it, and just going to see birds whistling and dogs barking outside and there's nobody out there.
Like 28 days later.
Yeah.
Children of Men, we refer to it more as.
What's that?
Have you seen Children of Men? That's what yes, I was rattling around my head.
Yeah. Oh, well, this is, once again, they're telling you the stories. You know, they're telling you what they're up to. And they have to keep playing off these narratives. It's, you know, that. But when you sort of know, you know, and you can't teach anybody else it. They have to find out for themselves. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't really drink it, you know.
Well, I mean, just this week where in our cul-de-sac here, it snowed, obviously, up here. We're digging out, and one of the neighbours all the neighbours that were helping dig out were saying, oh, we've been laid up over Christmas, blah, 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 all with COVID. And I'm thinking, you're still fucking... Even if you were testing yourself in 2020, you're a moron. Yeah. If you're still testing yourself in 2024, right, 2025, you're a fucking idiot.
Well, you know Carrie Mullis about the test, the PCR. You know, Carrie Mullis went out and said, you can find anything you want with this test. You just turn up the cycles.
His exact words were, you could find a dinosaur anywhere, wherever, even though we know that's nonsense probably now. But
He was interviewed, and I've even watched his long interviews where he slags off Fauci, and he goes against Fauci with the HIV and the so-called AIDS, the AIDS scandemic, and the first rodeo of Fauci. Really, that was the first one.
It seems like you've been listening and watching to a lot of stuff that we have, because we've been into all this stuff since we were kids. To be fair, you see it mounting up. It was like we were made ready for 2020.
Yeah. I mean, that's why my Facebook account just took off, because people were waking up in 2020 and they were looking for someone that, you know, that had information or gone down the rabbit holes and come back out with the golden nuggets. And I've been doing it, like, say, 25 years, maybe. My oldest child is 26. And it is one of the things that woke me up was the birth certificate. And it's the informant. And I'm like, one, why is it in red? And two, why am I informing on my child? I don't understand. And back then, I was a big-time criminal. So I was informing was not something we did.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm thinking, I'm not informing on my own child. I'm not putting my name there. So I mean, big time in my head, not big time.
Yeah, I know what you mean, mate. I know what you mean. It's amazing how the training like you that you had at college and university, and I had say in business, if you like, and even Chris's in his chef world, put you on a foundation where you could see these things happening.
Yeah, and it's I've always known there's something bubbling around in the background, and I knew something would kick off, but I didn't think I'd be around to see it.
Mm.
I genuinely didn't think I'd be around. I thought it'd be, you know, I prep my kids, I prep my children. You know, they're in their 20s now, unjabbed, from their own decisions, their own choices. And, you know, I thought, well, I've done the job. I've done the job I need to do. And then obviously 2020 kicked off, and I thought, wow, I'm actually going to watch the shit show circus unfold. I got front row. I've got the Willy Wonka golden ticket front row seat. I am going to watch this kick off.
I actually thought, though, I don't know about you, it's the first time, talking about war footing, it's the first time I thought we're going to have to pick up arms.
Mm.
Oh, and I had a fucking clue how to shoot or do all that stuff. But I were ready for that. I thought that's where it were going.
Yeah, same. That's what I was doing in London.
I thought there were going to be a civil war.
Well, it was brewing. I think that's what they wanted. They wanted a red button to be pressed. I think the government were looking for it to completely kick off. Some of the protests we had what you call it, agent provocateurs. We had people masked up and that coming in, and the so-called bloody Antifa and all that. But these guys were military. It was one protest in London, and I was with a friend of mine, and she was getting harassed by this guy. So I walked up with my megaphone and just started going blah 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 right in his face, and I clocked two guys staring at me, both real short haircuts, solid build, small guys, but you could see they were toned.
Yeah, but something like you knows, don't you? Because you're in that world, aren't you? You know when people are like that. Like I could tell when people have done weight, for instance. You know, that's your... All right, that's it for part one. If you want to join us for part two, members hour, you can join us at sheepfarm.co.uk. That's sheepfarm.co.uk. If you're not going to join us, we'll see you next week. Bye.